Welcome to the Added Value Podcast. I'm your host, Jules Thompson, and here we're talking all things influencer marketing. Through conversations with brand building professionals and the content creators who support these thriving businesses, we're uncovering what it's like to build a personal and professional brand in the social media age. We are gaining a better understanding of each other's perspectives, struggles, learnings, and expectations in order to better work together to achieve our common goals. We are owning the value we are all bringing to the table, making the influencer marketing industry more collaborative and effective. Thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get to the show. What's up, fam? Long time no speak, but I am so thrilled to be back on the mic, you guys. It's Julia here, your host of Added Value Podcast. I missed you. I hope you missed me. I would love to introduce you guys to our guest of the podcast today. Her name is Joanna Voss. She is a badass from Denver, Colorado. She has been in the influencer industry for over 10 years, guys. So she has tons of experience. She has a wide range of variety of clients in the influencer space. And she's just such a bright light of a human. We actually met in the Women's and Influencer Marketing Facebook group. Can you believe it? I literally just posted in there that I had a podcast and if anyone had any recommendations. She jumped in. We had an initial phone call. We hit it off. I just love her energy. I love her passion for the industry. I love her perspective. And she's just so open and honest about how her business runs, how she works with clients, how she works with brands. And she is just someone who clearly has the best interest of everyone she works with in mind. And it's evident from any conversation that you have with her. So I'm so lucky that the internet brought us together and that we shared this conversation before coronavirus happened. So just a note that this was recorded a little bit ago, but you're still going to love the content. We talk all about her client base and her diverse group of women that she represents of all different races, age groups, niches, verticals. She works with tons of different brands. She works with influencers who are also authors and speakers and who have podcasts. So she just has so much experience with representing talent that has a ton of different talents. So no matter who you are, if you're on the brand side, or if you're an influencer, or you're just listening along, I appreciate all of you being here. I know you're going to love Joanna as much as I do. Make sure to follow along on Instagram at Added Value Podcast, where I'm always posting tips and tricks for how to navigate quarantine, influencer life, and just connect with you guys on the content you guys want to be hearing. Without further ado, here's Joanna.
Hi, Joanna. Thank you so much for coming on Added Value Podcast.
Hey, Jules. Lovely to be here, and thanks so much for having me.
Of course. So we'll get right into it.
What have you been up to this week?
This week has been signing a bunch of contracts that have been pending for quite a while. So that always feels really good. Planning, I'm hosting 8 of my 9 clients in Denver in April. So have been planning on the logistics of the Airbnb and coordinating with a photographer and just that, which is a ton of fun.
Oh yeah. Well, tell me more about that. What are you guys going to be doing?
We are just, not all of them know all of the rest of them. And so it's a chance to bring them all together. You know, we'll do some kind of business powwow, chat about a few things, but more just a chance to hang out, have a good time, kind of chill out for them to explore a new city and just have fun together and get to know each other a little bit more.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I've always found that for at least me, meeting people in person and establishing that relationship just like does so much for the camaraderie of our community, especially, you know, I'm sure with you owning a small business, it's a lot for you to kind of put something like that together. And I'm really sure that they appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah. They're all so excited. As soon as I sent the email a couple months ago, 2 of them replied in 5 minutes with their flight information. So I was like, whoa, okay, I guess this is happening. So yeah, I'm like not rushing April by any means, but I am really excited to have them here.
Yeah, that's amazing. So go ahead and talk about the specific genre of influencers that you are able to work with.
Absolutely. So my clients are all women. They run the gamut for industries that they represent. Couple that are lifestyle influencers. So one is more wellness and fitness. One is more sort of beauty, travel, fashion. Another one is in that same sort of beauty, travel, fashion, hosting space. A couple of my influencer clients are food bloggers and food influencers. So that whole umbrella of recipe creation, cooking products, kitchen products, you know, just like kitchen and homeware kind of things, alcohol, beer, wine, all that sort of fun stuff. And then the last three are in the finance space. So anything that has to do with money, be it credit cards, you know, bank accounts, investment platforms, personal loan information, debt management. And yeah, so those are the sort of general areas that my clients happen to fall into. They're all women. Majority of them are women of color. They, outside of being influencers, are keynote speakers. A number of them are authors. They're writers. They're maybe half of them are moms. They're from 30 to 55, 56. And they, a number are bilingual, and they're also all across the country.
Wow, that's inspiring. That's an inspiring group of women to be around. So you're basically also like a publisher and PR manager and everything on top of a, typical influencer manager. How did you meet a lot of your clients?
Most of them actually came through my first client, who is Lorraine C. Lattish of Viva 50. She reached out to me a number of years ago when I was still doing more. I was not in the influencer management space. She reached out to me when I was doing business consulting and strategy, working with female solopreneurs, helping them grow their business. She has been, I joke that she's been in like a online entrepreneur since before the internet was existed or had existed, because she's been working for herself her entire life, and she's going to be 56 this August. And so anyhow, she came, she had me come down to Florida to do some strategy work with her around growing her business. She had two brand opportunities come in when I was down there, asked me to pretend to be her manager. So I have sort of course said yes. And the brand said yes. I, you know, pitched more than she would have, which was part of her whole conversation about raising her rates. And when, before I left, we got along like a house on fire. And, you know, just those people, as soon as you meet, you're just like, oh yeah, you're my person. And so before I left, she asked me if I would be her manager, shared that she had been looking for someone to partner with for about a year and a half, but just didn't find someone who was the right fit. I didn't know really anything about the space, but said yes, because I love a, you know, I love a challenge. I like figuring stuff out. I'm pretty resourceful. And honestly, it just seemed fun. And I loved the chance to continue to work with her. And from her, because she's sort of one of the OG influencers, bloggers in the online space, she just by nature, and she's also incredibly open and transparent about most everything in her life. So she would just share what she's up to. And so she would share about me and talk about me. And my next client came through her, or came from her, Jeanette Kaplum. And kind of from there, it's like I can literally trace of the nine, probably four or five of them came from Lorraine. Again, not necessarily directly, but just, you know, Lorraine would talk about me all the time and tag me and mention me and, on Instagram and Facebook Lives and stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah. So a couple things I want to dig into there. So you kind of first started that you got, or that she was really interested in working with you, and that she asked you if you would work with her as her manager, because partly because that you pitched more than she would have. And I think this is an important call out, because I think that a lot of influencers get self-conscious because their worth monetarily for their job is very much tied to them as a person. There's no separation between what their title is and who they are, which is a really hard place to be. It's really hard to place value on yourselves. I mean, I have, you know, a hard time doing it when I'm, you know, at my job negotiating a salary or a rate or anything like that. I think it's a very common thing to struggle with. And the influencers that do represent themselves are very good at, you know, asking for rates and kind of sticking to it. So what do you think is the value of having a manager to be able to speak to rates for you? And what do you think the value is that you were able to bring to that first client that really made her say, hey, I need to bring her on as my manager?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're totally right. People, it's personal. So if they say, you know, if an influencer is pitching an idea and the brand says no, it's not a no to them. It's a no to the idea, but it's hard to separate the two out because they're so tightly intertwined. So the value of having a manager, because of that, it's not personal for me. So I can ask for more. I don't have that same fear of risk. If a brand comes in and says, oh, you know, we'd love, here's the scope of work. You know, it's X, Y, and Z. And my client may usually, if they were to do it, would maybe like, oh, well, you know, I would really love to get, you know, 6,000, but I'd be willing to do it for 5 and I'd be okay with 4. It's like they automatically sort of go down in their number, like talking themselves out of it. Whereas I'm going, okay, this is just a business transaction. Let's just look at what you're doing, the value of what you bring, why they want you, the quality of product you're delivering. This is an X amount of products, or, you know, X amount of quality of what you're doing. Like it should be, you know, I don't know, $10,000. Or maybe it's like 8,000 would be great. So let's ask for 8,500. Let me ask for 9,000. And I can do that ask. And then if the brand either says yes, which is great, the influencer wouldn't necessarily have taken that risk. So that's a value of having an agent. And then if they say no to 9,000, but you know, can you do 8,500? Or, you know, we really wanted to come in at 8. Can we meet somewhere in the middle? I can say yes to that and not take it personally. Like it's not an affront to me or my brand. So that is another benefit to having a manager. It's also great because I can play that sort of good cop, bad cop. Like one thing I always keep in mind when I'm negotiating for my clients and mostly interfacing with brands and agencies, nobody wants to lose face, right? Nobody wants to be embarrassed. Nobody wants to feel awkward or you know, like someone's kind of calling them out on being like, I can't believe you're only offering like $5,000 and, you know, this is really worth, you know, a $10,000 product or project. Because I have to remember the brand and agency, just as I am a messenger, excuse me, and a face for my client, they are just a messenger and a face for their client. So we're kind of like these two messengers in the middle talking. And so I always keep that in mind. And if, you know, let's say the brand comes in for a project and they're like, hey, we know that it's a lot, it's a big ask. But you know, we've only got $5,000, you know, our budget just got cut, X, Y, and Z, whatever the situation is there any way you can make it work? I can say to the brand, awesome, thanks so much for thinking of my client. You're right. This is a project that the value is, you know, $10,000. That's the rate I'd quote you. Let me take it to them and see what they think because I know they really love this brand. So I can go back to my client and my client, you know, we can have a side conversation about it and they may be thrilled to get 5,000 for it. Or they may be like, oh my God, right? Because everyone's perspective on money is very different. And so they may be going, oh my God, 5,000 is great. Or yeah, I'd love 10,000, but sure, I'll do it for 5,000. I can come back and have that conversation then with the brand and agency and say, bummed we don't have more budget, but like super psyched that you thought of us. We'd love to partner on this for 5,000. And now everyone's happy. And like no one got upset, no feathers got ruffled in the interim of that negotiation. On the flip side, it's great to have an agent when the brand steps over boundaries and becomes needy or pushy or isn't on time getting feedback back to my client, you know, to get approved copy back. Or they send it back, you know, at, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night. And they're like, can they go live with this tomorrow morning? And maybe there's edits to the blog or the video or social copy. It's great for me to say, they actually need 24 hours. So this will go up on Wednesday, not Tuesday. Or being able to follow up with the brand and say, you know, be that, I don't want to use the word nag, but be that person who can stay on them to get what my client needs, you know, if they're like late on timing, to get copy back for approval or something like that. So that's also just great because the client then doesn't have to be in that sort of mucky space of now kind of being the nag about, you know, hey, you owe me this. Hey, I need my content back. Like, hey, what's going on? I haven't heard from you. I get to do that. And again, to me, it's more just, hey, just friendly, you know, friendly reminder, just pop it in your inbox. I know you're really busy. You know, do you have the updated copy yet? So that's also really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you touched on so many important things here. I love what you said about how, you know, whoever's representing the brand is just the name and the face for the brand. And whoever the agent is just, you know, the face and representation for that creative. So it's really important to understand that, like, you're right. We all do just want to come and find a happy medium at the end of the day and create those relationships that are long lasting. One thing that I've kind of struggled with in the past with working with agents, to be honest, is I feel like I can't really build a proper relationship with the influencer when I'm having to go through this middle person. So what are your tips? Like, what would you recommend for brands and influencers who really want to kind of create that personal connection when you don't communicate with them directly?
Yes, that is a great question. I obviously can only speak for myself, but there are definitely times when I will be on calls and be on email chains. Like, once we get past the negotiation part and we're like, okay, this is happening. Here's what's happening. You know, it's a video or it's a series of blogs or whatever the case may be. And it warrants a call. I make sure my clients are on that call so they can actually talk directly to them, because you're right. They hire the client for their creative division, you know, creative vision, and they love their content and they want to connect directly with them to maybe get some feedback or get some ideas or share, like, hey, we just did this influencer partnership and it went really well. Like, we'd love to see you do that. I by no means get in the middle and I'm like, no, 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 you can't talk to any of my clients. So I would say for brands and agencies, perhaps ask if you are able to do a call with the influencer that you just hired for a partnership. I'd love to think that agents would be open to that, especially when you're like, this is specific to create a vision to make sure we're all on the same page, because, you know, it's like a game of telephone, right? If it goes from them, you know, the brand to the agency, to me, to my client, like, there's stuff that's always lost. So I'm conscious of that and make sure when it makes sense to connect the brand and agent, or, you know, the brand and influencer directly. I actually asked about this, was gathering testimonials at the end of last year, 2019. And I asked what it was like working with me versus my client for that exact reason, because I was very conscious of that. And all the feedback that we received was that it actually, they don't feel like it. I know you said you had a different experience, Jules, so I'm not by any means like knocking that, but I, you know, I was sensitive to it. And they said it was actually beneficial to them because I was just able to get answers quicker. Then sometimes, you know, influencers aren't perhaps as responsive as I might be because this is my full-time job. I've also found that brands have been able to, when they do post their content and the brands interact with the creatives' content on Instagram or, you know, repost it and reshare it, there is an exchange and a conversation there that happens. So that is just another like link that can be built between the creative and the brand and the agency.
Yeah, no, I love those ideas. I think, you know, jumping on a call and then, you know, I do love chatting with people in the DMs. I just don't know if they always know who I am behind the brand. Sometimes I try to say like, hey, this is Julia, by the way, I've been working with you. Yeah, those are really great tips. So I love that you tried to connect your talent to the brands whenever possible. And I think you are in a great, unique situation where you're kind of one, your own unique boutique influencer agency. So you're working with 9 people versus some of these agencies have, you know, hundreds of talent in their roster. So I think you have a great relationship and you're able to build that trust with your clients. And then that's going to show through in the partnership. So yeah, obviously every agency is different. I've had tons of amazing experiences through them as well. But I just always am looking for ways to kind of strengthen those bonds and partnerships. But I think what you said about relaying feedback is also really, really important. I love it when agents kind of can tell me, hey, you know, so-and-so really loved this product, loved working with you. She's mentioned to me multiple times that she wants to continue, you know, promoting your brand and product. That's the direction she wants to go in. Please keep us in mind for, you know, future collaborations. So I think that feedback loop is so important, and how you mentioned earlier about the transparency, you know, between, you know, budget or deliverables, or, you know, what you're, you know, I'm asking one of your influencers to provide some content that their audience doesn't respond to, and you let me know. So at the end of the day, just being as transparent as possible and closing that feedback loop, like you said, is just going to help both sides for sure. Do you ever, first of all, evaluate any kind of partnerships to kind of see what the results are of the partnership? And do you ever bring that feedback back to your client, even if it is negative?
Can you explain a little bit more about exactly what you mean?
Yeah. So for me, what I'm always looking for on the brand side is what kind of engagement the posts got, first and foremost. And obviously, if I can see the actual versus potential reach, and if there are screenshots of like click-through rates and things like that, I always am calculating the engagement of those versus how many people saw it. So I just didn't know if you guys keep track of that, and if you internally kind of keep that information out so we can say, hey, maybe we should be improving or looking at improving your engagement, or, you know, different things like that.
Yes, 100%. Most of my clients use Influence Kit, which is a reporting metric platform where when you do a campaign, you put, I actually don't really know how it works on the creative side because that's not where I see it, but the influencer would put all of their content from stories, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, blog posts, Pinterest pins, onto this one, you know, whatever they upload it to as part of a collective campaign. And then they send me the link for it. And on that link, we'll have every piece of content, and you can actually hover over and see, you know, reach, click-throughs, fast forwards on Instagram stories, shares, comments, likes, engagement, all that sort of stuff. And so one, that goes to every brand or agency when we wrap up, or I should say when something goes live. I will send the link over. It's a dynamic report. It updates every 24 hours. So yes, we definitely collect all the information. And I always just look at everything because I'm just curious. And two, it is good for me to know, because a lot of times, you know, you'll see, like, I can think of one client where Yvette Marquez, she posted with Instant Pot, and it was like, oh my God, your stuff is blowing up. Like way more than other posts that she's done. Like her content just really, really resonated with her audience. So it was just cool to see that. And then when I sent it through to the brand, I'm like, hey, you guys are going to see these numbers, but this is going really well. Like her people are loving it. You know, the stuff that you can't see are people sliding into her DMs, telling her XYZ, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like I will share that. And sometimes we'll share screenshots of those conversations just when a brand, you know, can't hurt to tell a brand like how much a client's audience loves them. And then conversely, I have looked at influencers' metrics for things, or, you know, maybe just check in and say, hey, a brand is asking about your Instagram story reach. Can you just send me like an updated screen, you know, snapshot of what those numbers are? And I have seen some come through for clients, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Like you've totally dropped, you know, you used to have thousands and now you have 800. Like what the heck is going on? Sometimes it's, you know, it's Instagram, it's the internet. Like no one has any idea why that's happened, or there's some different algorithm change or some update that screws everything up. And maybe it takes a couple of days for things to settle out. In one case, actually with a client, she has 6-figure following on Instagram, and she was sending me her story insights. And I'm like, why on earth do you have so few? We're talking like hundreds of views on stories. I'm like, something is wrong here. Like this, something is off. And it turned out when she poked around, she just hadn't realized somehow she, you know, only people in New York or something super bizarre, and just like had narrowed her scope of stories. I can't remember what it was, but it was like something very random that she didn't even realize she did. And it was clearly an accident. But it was only because I had asked that we were able to see that and change it. And then her numbers went back up again to like where you would expect. So yeah, definitely always have eyes on numbers and campaign results and just kind of like real time what's happening.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's always good to kind of receive that validation, I guess, on the other end, because I know that's something that's important to the brand. And it's cool to see that that's definitely reflected on the influencer side as well. It's kind of a given, but, you know, it's always just good to know and to hear that feedback. So, you know, you are a solopreneur, you work for yourself, you have this awesome business that you've made. So if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about your journey and how you got here. And then I would also, after that, love to kind of go into how you set up your business, if there's anyone listening who is interested in representing talent.
Absolutely. So the quick and dirty version, this is my 10th year. It's 2020. This is my 10th year of doing business. And it's had three different chapters. It may make no sense to the listeners, but it's one of those things where it makes total sense to me. And I see I was always moving in this direction to end up doing talent representation. The first chapter, the first few years of my business, when I became an entrepreneur, I was a nutrition coach working with female athletes, specifically female runners, female cyclists, female triathletes doing Ironmans. And did that for a few years, loved it, was always looking for something else to do that used just kind of honestly like a different part of my brain. And I had time on my hands. So I was looking as I grew my one-on-one coaching business, was always saying yes to other projects and other entrepreneurs that reached out to me. This was like 2011 through sort of 2012, 2013, 2014. And, you know, was in different online programs and courses and stuff. And people would always say, oh, Joanna, you're so like organized, or we love the questions you ask and like how you think about, you know, stuff when we talk about different projects in our mastermind. I'm really good at project management and seeing sort of overall strategy and then boiling it down to the nuts and bolts of things. And so, or people would say, oh, we saw your course launch. Like, you did a really good job. Like, can you come do that for us? And so, of course, I said yes, and loved it and didn't think of it. I just thought of it as like, oh, I'm just sort of helping this person out. I always got paid. I always said yes, but I never took it as seriously as I should have until a couple years in. And I thought, wait a second. I'm actually, if I think about doing this as client work, it's actually, it had gotten to a point where my time and revenue stream was greater from that than with coaching. And I loved it. And small, you know, week projects became a month. And then the next iteration would be 3 months and then sort of 6 months. And then I ended up becoming on retainer behind the scenes with a number of different people. Still doing my nutrition coaching, but like very, very little. And then was in that space doing the consulting, strategy work, operations. That was when I, just before I met Lorraine. And then there was a little bit of overlap when I met Lorraine and was starting to work with a couple other influencers as their agent. Again, in my brain, it was just like on the side. If you'd asked me what I was doing, I would have talked about business consulting and my strategy work. And then in 2018, when things were really building and taking off for me and my talent agency business, because things were going great for my clients, I decided that January 1st, 2019, or actually, I guess December 2018, I would say no more retainer work. I said goodbye to all that stable, lovely income. And I went full commission on the agency full time, even though I had been kind of doing two things full time. That is all I do now. So it's been a little over a year that's just been working with my 9 clients and just doing the agency work.
Wow, that's an incredible. That's a you know, self-made story if I've ever heard one. Not a lot of people have the courage to go out on their own. And I think that you probably can relate to a lot of your talent in that way because they're solopreneurs working for themselves and many rights. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that you seeing them work really hard for themselves and them seeing you work really hard for yourself is just such a mutually beneficial relationship, and that you both want to be successful. Mm-hmm. So I know that you mentioned at the beginning of your career, you were super smart in diversifying your revenue streams, which I don't think a lot of people, you know, have any idea how to do, especially when it comes to social media and how important mm-hmm. that is. So do you advise your talent to come up with ways to earn money outside of Instagram? And if so, what do you tell them?
I don't advise them that because they actually already are. By the time I partner with them, and the clients that I partner with, I am not looking to build their status as a social media influencer or build that branch of their business. I'm helping them grow and manage it. And there is a difference there. So all of the clients I work with, they all have other revenue streams, 2 or 3 or maybe more. I can't think of any right now, but it may be, you know, ads on their website because their website, they've been building their website traffic for years. So it's really high. Some of them do one-on-one coaching. Some of them are authors. So they have book royalties coming in. A number of them are keynote speakers. So they are doing, you know, obviously keynote talks and workshops and presentations around the country. I do think that having other income streams is essential outside of the influencer space or just really any business you have, because it takes some of that pressure off of making it all work, of making like, oh my God, I have to have this influencer thing happen. If you're looking to build your following and maybe you're doing stuff with brands and you want to do more stuff, or you're just looking to even start, it's a different sort of feeling when you have that, like, you know, you pitch something and you're like, this has to work, versus like, all right, well, recognizing it's going to take time, recognizing this is going to take a number of pitches. That's just sort of the rule of numbers. So having those other income streams just helps, I think, with that perspective. And then their interaction with me, the word that comes up is like desperate or desperation. I don't mean it like that, but you know, if all your eggs are in one basket, every day you're like, this has to work today. Like, I got to land the big deal today. And it just changes the dynamic, and that doesn't really work for me. So yes, anyone who is in business for themselves, I do recommend multiple streams of income. And actually, to that point, before you start, if you're ready to take a leap of faith and work for yourself, do it on the side. That is probably the one thing that I would have done differently when starting my business. I went full in on, okay, I'm going to be a nutrition coach. I'm going to make this work. I didn't have any other gigs on the side. And I had been traveling for 2 years, living abroad, traveled the world for a year. And I came back and I was like, okay, this is it. It kind of started when I was living in Barcelona for a year. And I just came back and I was like, okay, it's going to be nutrition coaching. And it took me a while, like I'm going to say a couple years, before I realized I had a financial necessity of just like getting a job. I mean, I worked at a grocery store. I did other help for someone that I knew at a local agency, another small business. And it just, again, took that pressure off of me getting my nutrition coaching off the ground, because the reality is it takes a while. And by a while, I mean like a couple years, even if you're earning money, to earn the amount of money that you need to like live on and then you take out for taxes. It really, I think, isn't fair to your entrepreneurial dreams if you aren't gonna have it on the side and aren't gonna have like other jobs that will guarantee you at least be able to keep the lights on and keep food on the table, if that makes sense. That's like my one thing in hindsight. I just didn't have that wisdom, and no one had really told me at that point that I should have a job on the side.
Yeah, and I think it also helps you prevents you from making bad business decisions. Yes. You know, if you're wanting to be an influencer and you need the money that badly because you're focusing on that as your only source of income, you may make brand deals or partnerships that don't really align with what you believe in, and that can hurt you down the line. You can also cheapen yourself. I mean, I think that, you know, it's so funny, the juxtaposition of having the confidence to kind of sell yourself and sell what you know and being confident, but on the other end, knowing that you need the business. Mm-hmm. So you, as an advocate for your clients, you know, how do you go about really, you know, pitching them and sharing their value? Because that's such a valuable skill to have, is, you know, helping brands to see the value that your clients bring to the table. And then the extra layer in that is that you represent people of color. And I think mm-hmm. that businesses can do a lot better job of representing that more. So I'd love for you to go into that a little bit.
Yes. I hear ye, hear ye. I agree. There needs to be more representation of actually what our reality and real world looks like. Your first question about pitching. So I would say I do more soft pitching, and it's very strategic in that I usually, when I'm reaching out to a brand or agency with an idea, or if the agency reps, you know, a certain company that would make sense for my client, 99% of the time I have a relationship with them. Or I can say, hey, Joe Schmo at this agency, I see that you rep, you know, this other client. Is that your account? Is it someone else's account? Like, can you connect me to that person? Assuming I've already talked to, you know, Joe Schmo and we've already worked together. My pitching is more, it's more soft in that if there is something, I don't know, I'm thinking of just like a random brand, like Zico water, right? Coconut water, that would make perfect sense for a client of mine. And I get the contact and I reach out to the client. I have this great idea. My client has this like most amazing proposal, and they've, you know, all five of their family members drink Zico water, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And they just have like a beautiful house for photos and this great story about how it's, you know, hydrates their whole family because they're all athletes, or whatever the case may be, that seems like the perfect package. Very rarely, and I'm going to even say never, will you reach out to a brand, pitch an idea to them, and they will say, oh goodness, thanks so much. Wow, we had, you know, $20,000 just lying around and we were out of ideas and we didn't know what to do and we didn't have any content creators. This is so perfect. What perfect timing. It never happens like that. So that's why I say soft pitching, in that I will share that proposal with the Zico coconut water and say, you know, here's the idea, here's the vision, here's what could happen, here's what my client would, you know, here's their story, here's their why. There's ever a chance, you know, if you have any Q2 or Q3 influencer partnerships on your horizon, I would really love for you to keep my client in mind. Or do you see this as a possibility? Or have you already allocated your budget for the year? So I will ask questions more like that. And to me, it's more like planting seeds. And then I will just continue to follow up on that and make sure my client is following Zico Water, you know, tag Zico Water when they're using them, comments on Zico Water's posts, just to do what they can to stay on the radar. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, no, you're definitely showing them versus telling them, which is a very effective approach. You know, I have so many people reaching out to me saying, you know, I have this client who loves your products, blah, 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 but they've never mentioned us in a story. They've never talked about us before. They don't even have any, category, you know, specific content on their feed. Yeah. So, you know, it's very easy to kind of see through those words, but I love that, you know, you make sure that your client is super involved and actually doing what they say that they are interested in doing.
And I will actually push back at my clients sometimes when they're like, you know, they may see something and say, oh, look, they're working with that Mexican food blogger. Like, I should work with them too. I love that product. Can you reach out to them? And I'm like, great. Tell me more. Like, before I reach out to the brand, I will push back on my clients and be like, okay, well, they just did a campaign with, I don't know, three Mexican food bloggers. So like, why would they do another one? Why you? What's your story? What's the angle? What can we share about you that would make sense? Or maybe it's the same story, but highlighting that you just did, you know, a commercial with Coke that went live on Food Network. Or you've won an Emmy for one of your videos. So your video production is high quality. So I do my best to not just be, you know, passing, like turning around and just passing the pitch, but really like crafting it. Because you're right. Agencies and brand gets pitched all the time. They are hit up all the time for, I'm sure, really crappy requests where it's like, oh, I just want to work with you. Like, will you hire my client or will you hire me or whatever? So yeah, just trying to like just finesse. And for me, it really is more just planting the seed rather than saying, will you hire my client? Like, we want to work with you. But like I'm saying, you know, what do you have on the horizon or what's possible? Or, you know, does this even resonate? Or are you looking for more influencers before I even like go down that road? It just, to me, seems a little bit more respectful of you, you know, the agency and the brand's time as well.
Yeah. It's about creating that partnership, which I think if you are just intentional with, you know, the situation from the get-go of being conscious that it's actually a good fit. I mean, it's going to really go a long way and then probably pay off big time for your talent. So with that, I'd love to kind of go into how you structure your business.
Yep.
Again, because I think it's really interesting for people to see the insides of how agencies actually work. And then also kind of how that's reflected in influencer rates in general.
Yeah. So when you say structure my business, do you mean like I'm a one woman show or I'm an LLC S corp?
Well, you know what? Both are helpful. But mainly talking about like the compensation structure and the hours and the organizational tools that you use to kind of help your business run smoothly.
Oh yes. Okay. I work straight off commission. Actually, that's not true. I work off commission after starting in month four. So any new client who comes into my world, we partner with a monthly retainer for 3 months and 10% of any deals that we close in that time. So anything they're already doing, I don't touch. Even if I end up helping with it, I don't touch it. Starting in month four, I move to just straight commission, 20%, no retainer. And the reason I've structured my business like that is for this reason. Anytime someone comes to me and we decide to work together, they hire me, I hire them. There is always things that we need to do behind the scenes to just, either get them more organized, update their media kit, clean up stuff, you know, random emails that they may have scattered of things they have not been tracking, or like, oh gosh, here's these like 10 emails in the past 2 months I haven't followed up on of brands that wanted to reach out to me. Just the time spent kind of cleaning house, cleaning their business house, and getting that up and running. And then any updates to the media kit. And then I start expending my political capital to introduce them to my agency contacts. So I have, because I track this all with a CRM, I have over 1,000 brand and agency contacts. Obviously, some I have way better relationships with than others, but I will start reaching out to those contacts, especially the ones that are hot that I work with often, and say, hey, I just want to introduce you. Like, I have a new client. You know, Jules Thompson, here's what she's about. Here's her stuff. Here's her media kit. Here's her, you know, social media profiles. Here's her website. Just want to put her on your radar. Like, let me know if there's anything that you think may be a good fit, you know, down the road. So that's me taking a risk, which I'm happy to do, because at that point I know that I want to have this client in my world. And so the retainer is to sort of compensate for that time and for that work that we do for things that I'm not getting paid for, like all that sort of business behind the scenes, cleaning house kind of thing. I don't want to be in retainer. So if we start having partnerships happen quickly, I have moved off retainer so that we can just do straight commission, because it honestly is just a lot easier for everybody moving forward. So that is how, like, financially I've structured my business. And I will be honest, part of the reason I do a retainer is because it is an opportunity for me to see if someone's like, oh my God, I can't afford a retainer. Like, I can't afford to work with you. To me, it's about mindset. It's about is it a scarcity or an abundance mindset? And so for someone who understands that to grow their business and to bring on a team member like me, when they say, yep, got it, I'll pay retainer. They understand the value of what I'm doing. They understand why I'm doing it like that. They respect and honor my decision and how I run my own business. To me, it's really a test to see how they react to it, because it speaks volumes about who they are as a person. And I've had people who have had incredibly successful, like, financial businesses that wanted to work with me, and their reaction to talking about a retainer and talking about money at the very beginning of our conversation, immediately I was like, nope, this is not someone I want in my life. They are not, you know, just, they were weird talking about money. They weren't able to talk about risk. They were super private. They weren't, you know, open and honest with me. And that to me is just like all the red flags. So that is two, you know, sort of other side of the reason of why I structure my business that way. Organizational tools, keep it pretty simple. All the Google products, Gmail, Calendar, Drive, all my clients have their own folder on Drive, which they have access to. Dropbox is where we store all of our client content and deliverables. So all of them, you know, have a folder on Dropbox. It's all organized. So if you were doing, you know, let's say we got that Zico coconut water partnership, there would be a Zico folder in the, you know, whatever influencer's doing it. And that's where I would put the brief. That's where they would see any messaging points. That's where they would see if there's any like photo examples that the client has sent over. All of that would be in the Dropbox for them. And then once they finish their content, social media posts, photos, blog posts, video, whatever, it all goes into that Dropbox folder, and that's what I send over to the clients. So it's all nice and organized for everybody. What else do I use? We use Voxer, which is that walkie-talkie app to speak back and forth. I use that with most all of my clients all the time. What else do I use? I think that's...
Wow, why do you choose to do that voice communication?
It's honestly just easy. It's like, you know, I can pick up and just be like, hey, Alejandra, I need to know what times you're free next Tuesday because such and such a client wants to have a call with you. And then she could just write back, you know, she'll box me back and be like, all right, Tuesday at 10 Pacific, you know, Wednesday at this time, and then Thursday. And it's just a super quick way of communicating versus like sending an email or a message. People are not maybe sitting in front of their inbox all the time. I'm a talker, as you can probably tell. So it just works.
No, really well. I love that. I feel like it makes it more relational. I know that for me personally, working from home, and I know that a lot of people running their own business, you lack that personal connection a lot. So I actually think that's a really smart tool.
Yeah, it is true, because we don't, you know, I wouldn't necessarily pick up the phone and talk to them forever, but I will have multiple conversations going with multiple clients throughout the day. And it's as if we're talking all the time, but we're just bopping back and forth on Voxer. So it's like real time. It's great. It has that conversational, like, you know, and you're right. It does get lonely working for yourself, working at home. I'm single. I live alone. So it's like, and I'm an extrovert. So it's like hard sometimes to find that human connection, but just chatting with them on Voxer works.
Do you feel like you work more than normal people do because you work for yourself?
Not anymore. Definitely the beginning. You know, people talk about self-care and boundaries. Yeah, when you're starting your business, you're just saying yes to whatever and like hustling and hungry to keep the lights on. I have a lot greater sense of sanity now, which only comes because I've been doing this for 10 years. And confidence of, instead of, you know, a few years ago, if I got contracts in late at night, I'd be like, oh, okay, I gotta read them. I gotta turn them around. I gotta get them signed. I do my best work in the morning. I'm a morning person. So now if something comes in at 4 o'clock or, you know, 5 o'clock, I'm in mountain time. So sometimes stuff from California or people like later on the East Coast, I might get something. I will just wait until the next day because I've not made a mistake, but I've come close just because my eyes are tired. It's the end of the day and I'm just better and fresher in the morning, especially for contracts when you have to look at all the details and stuff. But that confidence of saying, of just tabling something until the next morning is only because I've been doing this for what seems like a really long time. And I'll take a Friday off because I can and because I work for myself. But then I may, you know, if I'm feeling a creative flow or feeling in the zone or something, I may work on a Saturday. But I think at the end of the day, I don't work more than, you know, what I see people doing in corporate America.
No, that makes sense. And I think you're right. It does take time to find that balance. I know you mentioned that you really haven't made mistakes in the past, but have there been any lessons that you or a client have learned that you think is super valuable that you've kept in mind?
Yes. Payments that take longer than planned and are beyond the net terms of the agreement. It happens way more than you think. It's a really not pleasant situation because for my clients, we're all small businesses. So, you know, a delayed payment of $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 or even $1,000 matters. You know, they usually have other contractors that they are waiting to pay. If an agency or brand or whatever is delayed in payments and my point of contact, they aren't the person in finance. They are not the person in accounting. So I've never had a situation where I've like gotten mad at that person, but I do often have to remind myself if a payment is really, really late, I'm like, okay, Joanna, it's not their doing. Like they are doing the best that they can. It's also out of their hands and out of their control. It's a really frustrating place to be in, but just remembering that. And then I then have to manage my clients to be like, listen, they're working on it, you know, so-and-so agency person is not in accounting. Accounting is like, you know, in the Chicago office. There's just, again, a lot of messengers and cooks in the kitchen sometimes. So that I would say is sort of the biggest, not trigger, but like place of reminding myself and my clients, like we have to stay professional. It's not, again, it's not personal, yelling at them and, you know, being super mad or going public about like, so-and-so client is late on their payment. Like, nobody wins in that situation. It may be just what you want to do, but nobody wins.
Yeah. And I will say from experience, it's just as frustrating on my end because I hate that happening for you. And I'm honestly not looped in until, you know, Joanna's reaching out to me being like, yeah, hey, you know, you're late. And then I'm like, oh no, this is awful. Obviously not how we want to be portrayed. You know, that's a hard spot for us to be in. So I will speak for everyone you've worked with who this has happened to, that we appreciate you and your attitude and the way that you handle that, because you're right. It is completely out of our hands as much as, you know, we want to make sure everything is, you know, as on time and professional as possible. You're right. Mm-hmm. With bigger companies, especially, it happens. So yeah, but that is a good call out. That is especially for someone who's just getting started, making sure to say, hey, we have net 30 terms, or asking, you know, the brand that you work with, what are your payment terms? Because a lot of people want like PayPal right away or the next day, but you know, we have a net 30 term system. You know, we only process payments every 2 weeks. If you're on the wrong side of that, it could be closer to that 30 days. So, but no, that's a really great call out. What is your favorite part about being in this industry? What do you love most about it?
Two things come to mind. Three things. I love things I don't know. And so this working as an agent, I am constantly learning things about brands, about agencies, about being an entrepreneur, about being a talent agent, about working with influencers, like insight from their world. I just think, you know, no day is the same. Before I worked for myself and before I did a lot of travel, I worked on political campaigns for 8 years, which I loved for a lot of the same reasons. No day is the same. You have no idea what your day is going to throw at you. And I love that. It's definitely an environment I thrive in. And it just really speaks to kind of my like adventurous, curious spirit. I love building relationships. And this whole industry, I mean, our whole world, to be honest, right? But like really, really, really influencer marketing is about relationships. The relationship the influencer has with their following, with their community, with their people, the relationship that I have with my clients, the relationships that I have with brands and agencies. And I love that being able to, you know, kind of sometimes like get to know the brand or agency rep, depending on like, I've had some long-term partnerships where, you know, we're sending like, you know, holiday cards. I send out holiday gifts every year. So it's like, you know, they'll get holiday cards and gifts from me, or knowing that someone is having a baby or getting married or just bought a house. Like it's just getting a chance to move beyond just the back and forth about the partnership. It's always nice to get to know someone a little bit. And then when I travel to certain places, like I'll be in Chicago in March for the Home Influencer Show or whatever it's called. And I've reached out to agency contacts in Chicago, some of whom I've been emailing with for years. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to be here. Like, let's meet up one-on-one. And so I'm so excited to meet them in person and just put a face to an email or a voice and vice versa. And the third thing that I love, and this is definitely in no particular order, seeing what I'm able to do for my clients by asking for more money and earning for them more of their worth and taking something off their plate that either they hate doing, they're not good at, they don't want to do anymore, or is just a distraction to all the other things they have going on. They all, you know, us ladies wear lots of different hats and we serve lots of different roles to lots of different people. And to be able to be their agent and to say to them, like, anytime a thing comes in, I'm like, I got it. Don't worry. I'm going to follow up. I'm on it. Is such a relief. I always joke that like I want one of me in my life, but it's
girl saying you can manage me anytime.
I'm like, I need a Joanna. I'm like, when can I get a Joanna? It's just so great, you know, not like, oh my God, I want to hear them gushing thanks to me, but for them to be like, thank you so much for helping me with that. Or like, thank you so much for telling the brand no, or thank you so much for pushing back. Or when I call, you know, I'll call and be like, hey, so you're doing X, Y, and Z. And they're like, okay, like how much is it? And I'm like, it's this amount of money. And maybe, you know, they were expecting less. And they're like, oh, you got that? And I'm like, yeah, I literally like just asked for it. I've had people just cry to me because they've been so happy with the projects I'm able to be like, hey, this is your, you know, you're doing this and this is what you're getting paid. They're all so incredibly grateful that, and I know that money is all going to good things, right? Like, women tend to support our own ecosystem as entrepreneurs. And I love being able to do that for them because I know they'll turn around and like, you know, put it towards a kids fund or a family fund or like, you know, their daughter's dance class or something cool, or like, wow, now I can hire like a professional photographer, whatever it may be. It's really awesome to be able to do that for them.
Ah, I love it. That's amazing. That's very energizing. And thanks for sharing that. So, now that you've been in the industry for so long, you've really seen it grow and evolve. Mm-hmm. I know that you and I met through a Facebook group, Women in Influencer Marketing. Look at the power of social media. Not only paying our bills, but making new friends, which I'm super, you know, thankful for. But do you have any other resources or places where people can go to get connected that you would recommend?
I would go online first, be it, you know, probably a social media platform of your choice, the one that makes the most sense to you, and find people that are in your area. My friends always joke that I like make friends off Instagram all the time when people are like, oh, where'd you meet this person? I'm like, oh, Instagram. I will find, I sort of have this filter of other successful female entrepreneurs in Denver. And when they pop up on my radar, I will, or if I see them like at a coffee shop in my neighborhood or one that I like to go to, I'll drop them a line and be like, hey, you're also in Denver and you're a successful entrepreneur and this, that, and the other, like, let's meet up for coffee. So I take those like old fashioned things of what we used to do before the internet and still do them. And some of my best friends have come from it, and I've solidified a lot of other amazing friendships because of it. So I would say go, you know, go to whatever platform makes sense to you, and I don't know, be it through hashtags or just seeing, you know, who else may be tagged at that location, reach out and see if they'd be open for a coffee or a meetup. I think so many of us do work for ourselves, and it's so lonely. Entrepreneurship is so, so lonely that, like you, they'll probably be craving some sort of connection as well. And, you know, just go with no agenda, and be open to whatever unfolds.
Absolutely. And that's something I told you in our first conversation that I really love and admire about you is that, you know, you're down for it. You're willing to follow up. You're going to make something happen. You're not just going to say you are, you're going to do it. That's a quality not a lot of people have, but obviously that successful people do. It's not the whole having all the answers, it's being willing to do something with those answers and making something for yourself. So you're right. Just putting action behind your words and not being afraid to put yourself out there is so important. So gosh, I love talking to you. It's so fun. I always learn so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So last couple of questions. Who is someone on Instagram that you follow that has provided a lot of value to you recently?
Oh gosh. I'm going to go with two. Sarah Blakely. Everyone knows her as the inventor of Spanx. She just keeps it real. I love that woman. It's so great to follow her Instagram and her Instagram stories. The lessons she shares about entrepreneurship and honestly just being real. She has like four kids under the age of 10 or something. And you watch her stories and you're like, you run a multi-billion dollar. You're the first self-made billionaire in America. Like, that's amazing. She's just so real. I love it. She'll be like, I'm about to go on stage and I just noticed that my dress is on backwards. Which I don't know. I really appreciate. And honestly, Heather K. McMahon, nothing to do with she is an influencer, but she's just wicked funny. She's not for everybody, but she's just really, really funny. So those are the two women whenever I log on to stories, aside from friends and clients, I'm always like, okay, what are those two up to? I'm like, where have they been and what's going on?
Amen. Those are two great ones. They're very different, but they're also amazing and perfect in what they provide. So that's two really great examples of having completely different content, but still bringing you tons of joy on the internet, which we all need more of.
Yep. The internet's a funny place.
Speaking of which, on those days where it's not feeling so hot and you're an ex-nutrition coach, and I'm sure none of that's gone away, but what are some things that you do that you don't compromise on a weekly basis to take care of yourself? Mentally, physically, whatever it may be, what's that just like one thing you have to do every week to take care of yourself?
So not one thing, but I work out, I move my body every single day. I eat well, I hydrate, and sleep. Or not necessarily sleep per se, but rest. Although I have been in the past month or so, been a lot more intentional about 8 hours of sleep because it truly makes a world of difference. Especially to me, because I get up early and work out and run. I'm one of those like crazy people who's out running at 6 o'clock in the morning when it's like 14 degrees and snowing, and I love it. So I just always wake up early, even if I'm like having a rest day or it's the weekend or whatever. So I've just noticed sleep is the game changer. I'm also 41. I can't stay up all night like I used to. That is true. People will tell you that. It is true. Listen to them. So I've just been a lot more intentional about getting 8 hours of sleep, prioritizing that. And then kind of what I was saying before about not working until all hours of the night, like if something came in late at night, actually turning my computer off and stopping. Staring at the computer screen all day, staring at my phone, mentally and physically exhausts me. And I can literally feel it in my face when I've had too much screen time. It happens, right? Like it happens to the best of us. We're not perfect, but I am a lot more cognizant of just not getting lost, like staring at my iPhone. I love to read, so that's something I do often. But those are the things, like sleep or rest, drinking lots of water, moving my body, and eating good food. Like, no compromises, 7 days a week.
I love it. So important. And I love that consistency too. Yeah, I feel like my posture has declined since working from home. It's like I'm always like on my bed or on my couch or standing at my kitchen counter hunched over something. So exercise, sleep, all the things you mentioned, super important as well. Well, tell everyone, Joanna, where they can get in touch with you, where they can keep up with you, see your work, all of that good stuff.
Absolutely. So I'm on the gram, which I love. That is my social media platform of choice. I am Joanna Voss, J-O-H-A-N-N-A, V as in Victory, O-S-S. And that's my website as well. All my things are linked up there. And that is honestly the best way to reach me. I'm the same thing on Twitter, trying to get better about Twittering, I guess, just for some PR and relationship building. It's a great tool to build relationships. But yeah, hit me up on the gram. That's where I'm at all the time.
Perfect. Yes, will do. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Jules. Thank you so much for having me. It was a delight.
Thank you, Joanna. Thank you to all of my friends tuning into this very special episode of Added Value Podcast. Make sure to follow Joanna on Instagram at Joanna Voss, J-O-H-A-N-N-A-V-O-S-S. Hit her up if you have any questions. I'm sure she'd be happy to chat with you on whatever questions you may have. Of course, hit me up at Added Value Podcast on Instagram. Let me know what you thought of this episode. If you learned something today or enjoyed our conversation, I would be so, so grateful if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, make sure to follow along on Spotify. I really appreciate your support there and would love any feedback that you have for future guests. All right, guys, stay golden. I'll see you next time.